The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with co-host, dear friend, and producer, Stu Schrager. Start producing.
Good morning, Tom, and welcome back.
Yeah, I was away for a while.
We had listeners all concerned last week whether or not you got out to California. Because I guess you were originally scheduled to leave on Sunday morning.
Yeah. And you know what happened? That flight that I was originally on, I don't know what happened. I was brain fog. But anyway, I booked the flight at 7 in the morning, which I don't recommend. But it turns out that flight got out. But somehow I was able to, on my phone, which I'm not real good at, I'm not really technologically adept, I was able to change the flight to Saturday. So we wound up with an extra day in Napa, which didn't suck, you know. So that was fun. I had a good time. I had a great time.
That's nice.
Maybe I'll tell you about it next week.
That sounds good.
And explain how I got thrown out of another restaurant.
Come on.
Yeah.
You're pulling my arm.
I'm not. I did. But that's for another show. We'll do that
okay.
next week.
Okay. And, you know, just so we get you, you might have your calendar out and you're putting down what we're going to talk about next week.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, St. Patrick's Day ain't that far away.
I know.
So we're going to have to schedule something about talking about corned beef and cabbage or something.
You know, it's funny. I have to do a Paddy's Day menu every year at the club. I don't know why. I mean, you know, we don't draw a lot of people. Half the people are still in Florida, you know. I don't do one, obviously, at Amano because it's an Italian restaurant and we're not open in Allure. But nobody eats it. I wind up, you know, I'm trying to get rid of corned beef for like 3 weeks. You know, corned beef cheesecakes, say corned beef, you know, egg rolls. It's ridiculous, you know. But it is what it is. It's tradition. And, you know, there's not a lot of traditional Irish cuisine stuff to really fill out the menu. You know, you have Culcannon is obviously cabbage and, you know, and trout and salmon and stuff they do, but it's not really all that varied. If you look up like traditional Irish foods, it's kind of like the same thing, you know, potatoes and cabbage and corned beef. And then there's obviously some fish there.
Then there's the Irish stew, right?
Irish stew. Yeah. It's always fun.
Which I could probably use some on a day like today. I know that it's like 11 degrees or something.
Good soup day. You know, you got to go find some soup, you know.
And I can't believe that you missed all the snow excitement.
It was great because I changed my flight coming back, too, to 2 in the afternoon. So I landed at 11 last night. And, you know, it's great because there's no traffic coming out of Kennedy. You know, the car to pick this up, I was home in 20 minutes. It was great, you know. And got most of the day in. You know, we went to breakfast down on the wharf and had some sourdough. You know, it was fun.
Well, I'm not sure how informed you are of how it all played out here. So Sunday morning, everybody woke up to some snow,
right,
which kept accumulating. I was out four times during the day to stay ahead of it. I guess we got about a foot. And then Sunday night into Monday, there was still snow coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cold, so it was like frozen. The first batch was like pretty powdery.
Mm-hmm.
Then it got like a layer of ice. So like when you shoveled, it was like shoveling sheets of like 3-inch snow.
Yeah, that's not good.
But so it started Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I was still shoveling. I had to take my mom to an appointment with a checkup for the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
There was no exit out of the house.
Really?
I literally had a shovel from the garage alongside the driveway, and then I got to the street. I'm not exaggerating. It was 4 feet wide to get from the sidewalk to the street because of the plowing, and it was probably about 3 feet high.
Yeah, that's brutal.
But again, I was lucky. It was like layer cake because you ended up getting sheets of snow, and it was easy considering what it could have been.
Yeah, well, Sunday night I had a foot and a half of wine out of Napa, so I was thinking of you guys, you know. But it's, you know what's funny? When I was a kid, right, we'd look forward to the snow because we'd grab a snow shovel and go bang on doors and people would pay us $2 to shovel their driveway out. I offered my neighbor's children, they were like, I don't know, 14 and 16 at the time, $100 each to shovel out my entire thing. No, not interested.
No, all is good. All is good. So we actually have guests with us today.
We do. We do.
So would you like to introduce them?
Yeah, a little background. I wandered into this place called Eddie's in Oyster Bay because, you know, I'm up that way a few days a week. And cool little place, man. And I met Elizabeth and Mo. Mo's the chef. Elizabeth's the owner. And they're here with us this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
So I got to put you aside for a second, Elizabeth, because it's a chef-to-chef thing now, right? You know? How the hell did you get into this?
It happened in a very dark night. No, it's been always something that I like to do. It's not the classic corny story that I cooked with my grandma, with my mom. Absolutely not. My mom, she's a great cook, but very simple. Pasta with sauce and grew up in a farm, so we're just very into, like, you know, not in process, whatever. Like, but we didn't see it like that. We just ate whatever we got.
Sure.
So went to pharmacy school, finished pharmacy school. But
not enough money in drugs for you or what?
No, you know, I should have followed that. But I always, by last 2 years that I was going to school, I started to cook part-time into a little bistro pub in Italy. And then I ended up, by the end, I ended up working 5 days a week, almost six. And I started to love it. But then my wife moved here in almost 19 years ago, and I did construction. And still, like, I had that call. I'm like, I want to go back to cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
So I signed up to ICE, the cooking school.
Yeah.
And then I found a job on Craigslist.
Okay.
And I met my executive chef that still to this day I respect dearly. As my mentor. And they told me, like, guy from Kentucky. And they cooked Italian food like nobody. You don't need to go to school. Work with me for 3 years. You're going to open your own restaurant.
Yeah.
4 years after, I have my own place.
It's funny. You know, a lot of people start like that, too. I mean, I was in early. I mean, I started cooking when I was, I lied my way into a dishwasher's job when I was 15. And then through a comedy of errors, I wound up on the line. But there are people that I know, countless people that go to school for something completely different, wind up part-time cooking somewhere and then fall in love with it. And I think what happens is it's if it's in your DNA, you can't do anything else. And if it's not in your DNA, you can only fake it for so long, and then it's just going to weigh you down, you know what I mean? It's just, absolutely. It's a love thing, you know? I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day who's retired, you know? I'm in my late 20s now, so I'm a little early there. But he says, when are you going to give it up? I'm like, I don't know if you ever give up art. You know, and cooking's an art. It's like painters don't retire and sculptors don't retire. Musicians don't retire. You know, I don't think we do either unless, you know, your body runs out of gas or whatever. You know, you
pull back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's something about the expression of cooking that gets us coming back for more every day, you know, and the ingredients too. I still get like excited when I see a thin skinned lemon and a clear eyed fish. You know, it's fabulous.
Oh, it's crazy that you say that because our grand manager person, Adela, like, you know, sometimes on Tuesday, I give two of my guys a little extra day off, especially right now that in the winter time is a little slow, and I just cook by myself. I'm like, I need this by myself. And if I have a shitty day, I go there, and she's like, and I can see that she talks to the dishwasher. I was like, you see, he's happy now. He's always happy when he's here. Like, it just, everything goes away.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're there, you start to bang pots around and stuff, but it's a love and hate relationship because you know what, you need to give up a lot of time, families. Sure. That's why I guess most chefs, they're divorced. I'm not yet.
No, just wait. Yeah, it's coming.
No. Thank God. My wife, she's fully supportive. Thank God. She's my strongest advocate. Like, you know, I run the special through her. Like, you know, I was like, what do you think of this? Nah. So, I couldn't do it like without the support. It just gives you a peace of mind.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But again, it just, you got to give up a lot of times. When people are working, you're working. When people are not working, you're working. So it's not easy.
Yeah, I found that the hours to me were a health benefit because when I have too much free time, I do some really scary things, you know, so I'm better off with a place to go every day and some discipline because I'm a disaster. Absolutely. Left to my own devices. I'm just a
mess. Listen, I was, when I sold my place, then I took a break for a few years, got into distribution, and honestly, like, and not because she's next to me, Elizabeth, she's probably the reason why I got back into it because she's very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell her, like, Elizabeth, tonight, I'm up, no problem. This is like, you know, like, she made me prioritize time with family and stuff. So making sure that everything now is, like, good place. But having a strong, like, you know, partnership, like, you know, ownership, that support, like, you know, this, like, it was an easier way for me to get back into it. I said never restaurants again until I started this. And then I'm like, I mean, where you been all this time, you know?
I think people are becoming more aware of the wear and tear on people who work in kitchens, you know, yeah. Because you see this thing all the time now, where, you know, quality of life stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, I was just in San Francisco, and San Francisco is a very liberal city, you know, and I was in this restaurant called Zuni, and they have this, they put an automatic 20% on your bill for gratuity, and then they add 6% for a quality of life thing for the people in the kitchen, which is nice in one regard, but in the other regard, I'm like, oh, you're being very nice to those people with their money. You know what I mean? If you're going to be charitable, what about you, you know, kicking in 6%, you know? They don't want to kick in the 6%. And if it was me, I would just put it on top of the, you know, it's like when people do the cash price and all that. Doesn't that annoy, it annoys me when I see that. Just build it in, you know what I mean? Why are you trying to make somebody fight with you? It's crazy, you know?
I just feel like it creates confusion.
It does. It does. And, you know, and the whole, a lot of it's virtue signaling too. You know, I'm gonna, oh, I'm such a nice person. I'm gonna give my people 6% of your money, not mine. You know?
Yeah,
which is kind of, you know, cheesy, I think, to some degree. But anyway, it is what it is. So Elizabeth, how did you do it? How did you get into this thing?
I always wanted to do it ever since I was a little kid. Well, at first I wanted to be a chef when I was little.
Yeah.
And then as I got older,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, as I got older, I had this beautiful, my grandmother bought me this beautiful, like, children's kitchen set. And I was down in my basement all day long. And but as I got older, I was like, nah, I want to be the owner. So,
I want to drive this ship. That's the one over here. I want to drive it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I want all the jobs. I want cleaning, plumbing, you know. it's an interesting calling. I mean, you know, if somebody said, listen, I'm doing this hypothetical job interview, okay? All right, listen, you're going to come into this job. You're going to be working 7 days a week, 14 hours a day. You're not going to make a lot of money. You probably can't get health care. Yeah, okay, sign me up for that. You know, and some of us still do. It's just crazy,
it's
right?
It's like a kamikaze. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's funny that when we met, she's like, oh, well, we gotta buy plates. I was like, oh no, I got everything. I was like, what do you mean? She's like, it's been 2 years that I start to buy stuff. I was like, but you didn't have a place. She was like, I always wanted to do it. Yeah, she was like, I already have plates. I've been buying little, she had even kitchen utensils. I was shocked. I was like, you really are committed to the craft.
She's
I wanted to do it. Like, she's young, you know, and I always tip my hat that at your age, 23, I didn't care. I was like, what's your dream? I'm like, get into tonight, getting drunk.
Yeah, you know? Of course,
It's just like, you know, she always had this dedication. I was like, I want to open a restaurant. I want to open a restaurant. So.
Well, it's great that you were able to follow through on it, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, because it's not easy to do anymore, you know.
No.
I always blame Tony Scott, who's a friend of mine. You know, he owns the steakhouses.
Yep.
And I said, if it wasn't for you, we could still build a restaurant for $30,000. You started these magnificent places. Yeah. Now everybody's dropping millions into these things, you know. And they're hard to recover. You know, people don't realize how difficult it is to open a restaurant. I mean, we have all these, you know, restaurants that are owned by lawyers and dentists and whatever, but they're doing.
Yeah.
Most of them tank, you know, because they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you know, they partner up with somebody who does and they keep their nose out of it and it's fine, you know. But now generally speaking, without a lot of money, it's hard to do, you know.
Impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Everything's so crazy expensive, you know?
It's probably a shift. There's no anymore. I've been to California. Like, I was in California 6 years ago, something like that, for work. And I remember seeing all this restaurant, as you were saying, like they look like casinos.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
like, they were beautiful. I'm like, this is a shifted where like what you built is just small little restaurant, 9 tables, a nice bar, and again, like it's very costly. But now those built those huge establishment where it's now shifted because back in the days, like you know. When you started, like they were just getting a loan from the bank, little money I saved, mm-hmm. my partner a little bit, and you were building a restaurant, scrapping every single dollar that you had, and then going on 2 or 3 weeks credit with the food to get started. And
yeah, sure.
Now these people, they see this as a different thing, where like they put $1 or $2 million and they treat it almost like well, it's a stock. If I get a return of 8%, 6%, 10% a year, it's an investment.
Yeah.
It's no more like a life mission where like yes it's good because this we all need to eat, but it's some, this is why like the small independent kind of died out because it's very hard to come up with a like $700,000 to open a small place.
Yeah, that's I know. I mean, take. You know, it's crazy. I mean, I know people who have put $15 million into these things. It's insane. Huge. And you know, how do you get it back out? The other thing is too. I think the reasons that you going to restaurants, I mean, you know, guys like us, we go in because we want to show people what we can do. And it's about the food first and the experience first. And hopefully the money comes later. A lot of these people go in for the money first and then the food comes later. You know what I mean? That's the difference, you know. You get these smaller independent restaurants. Those are the ones I like to go to because, you know, I want to support the artisans, the people that are in the back working their rear ends off. Not some CEO sitting in a, you know, in an office building checking, you know, stats on a computer about, you know, my franchise or whatever. You know, it's not the same. That's why you see all these little places in Brooklyn, you know, like Blanca and stuff. They're opening yeah. these tasting bars, you know, it's like 12 seats at a counter and 350 a head or whatever, you know. But that's kind of the last vestige of making money anymore is the yeah. smaller ones where you can keep your payroll down, you can keep your rent down, you know. Because that's what's killing everybody, you know. The rents and the payroll. My rent at Jewel was $45,000 a month. Wow. It's a lot of pressure.
Oh, my.
Wow. A lot of pressure.
You got a snow week, like we did last week, that we had to, like, she texted me in the morning, she's like, what are we doing? I was like, I don't think anybody's getting out today. And closing down, imagine, like, you know, thank God, like, you know, our rent is very reasonable compared to that.
Yeah, sure.
But even if you've got to pay $20,000, $25,000, it's, yeah. your month is screwed.
It's crazy. No, I mean, you have one snowy Saturday, and you backed up for 3 months trying yeah. to figure it out, you know, how to get the money yeah,
because
back.
Because tomorrow you're not going to do double.
No, never. And, you know, it's like I always said the restaurant business is different because if you were going to PC Richards last Sunday to buy a TV, right, and it snows, you get snowed, and you don't buy the TV. You buy it on Monday or Tuesday. You don't eat Saturday's meal on Monday. You know what I mean? Once it's gone, it's gone. You know what I mean? It's yeah. see ya, you know?
That's
and there's no
analogy,
there's yeah. no coming back for it, you know? Feel free to jump in, Stu, anytime you want to.
No, it's funny because the when you have a snow weekend like we just did, people will like just in today's world considered stranded because Uber Eats wasn't delivering.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine? Yeah.
But I mean, I know that it's funny. A guest of ours previously, Gus from Embassy Diner, uh-huh. he was about the only guy that was working. And on site, I called him like 11 o'clock Sunday night. My son was starving.
Well, diners in Chinese places are open no matter what happens.
But
yeah.
So he yeah. picks up the phone and he goes, we're here to two.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know what's great about Uber Eats? You can answer the door in your Crocs and nobody, and they'll still give you the food.
They don't boot you out.
They don't, no. you can't get thrown off the Uber Eats list, you know. So listen, there's a story behind Eddie's, right?
Yes.
All right, sure. Give us that. I'd like to hear that again. I got bits and pieces of it. Jen, I guess her name, your bartender?
Yes.
Yeah, she was telling me a little bit about it.
So it's named after my late father. He was born and raised in Scotland.
Uh-huh.
He had moved
Did here. You ever understand anything he said?
Yeah.
That accent is rough, man.
So my whole family's still over there.
Are they really?
But some live in Scotland, some live in England, so they both have different...
Yeah, my family's from Liverpool, so it's real close, you know.
But he called everyone mate, everyone. I mean, he had nicknames for all of us, all me and my siblings. But, so he was born and raised in Scotland. He had moved here right after college about. He had met my mom in London. And then he just, his dream was to come to the United States, so he made it happen.
Nice.
Yeah.
But you got a whole, like, tribute thing going on in there, right?
Yeah, every little design aspect of the place has a little piece of him. So there's maps on the wall. So one's of Glasgow, Scotland. He was born and raised right outside of Glasgow.
Uh-huh.
And then the other map is London, where my parents met. We have Highland cows in the bathroom, because those are from Scotland. We have soccer balls. My father was a huge fan of soccer. Soccer ball lights above the bar. And then we have thistle wallpaper, so that's the flower of Scotland.
Yeah, wow.
So there's every little piece.
So every time you go in there, you got to think of them, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. I get questions every day. What's that map? What's this? What's that? But...
Yeah.
The music card also on the...
Oh, yeah. We have all albums that he liked to listen to. We have he loved Ferraris, so we have a Ferrari display.
Best thing that I remember when you hang there up was like...
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
like the best thing that I remember when you hang there up was like the Eric Cantona.
Yeah.
The soccer player. I was like, there's a jersey. Like, I was like, where did
you... Cantona. I was like... His fans used to, Eric Cantona, his fans used to have this specific chant for him, and me and my father would scream the chant.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a signed jersey that's hung up in my restaurant.
I actually got to watch, to me, watching soccer is like watching a bridge rust, It's just like, I can't get through it, It's just too, it's like a barn burn, it's 2-1, what I mean? It's like,
That's what I think of, like, baseball.
Yeah, same thing. And nobody knows when the game ends. Yeah. The referee's on me. It's like the 0-0 and it's still going out there. I'm watching back. What are you doing? It's over.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to watch a World Cup match in a bar in Manchester, England one night, And that was kind of fun because everybody was really into it, And I didn't care who won it. I mean, I was rooting for England, obviously, because I'm there. But it was kind of fun to watch. But aside from that on its own, I can't get through it, Anyway, so... How did you guys decide on a menu and a concept? And, was there a thought process behind it? Was it preconceived? Did you guys do it on the fly? Or how did it all come together?
So I was born and raised in Oyster Bay.
Right.
And I kind of just knew from going out or seeing all the people, I kind of just knew what they want.
Right.
And I always said to him, burgers, sandwiches, salads, a steak. And he was like, no, maybe let's switch it. I'm like, I'm telling you, Mo, like, no, you have to do. And then I gave him just full
reign.
Full reign to do whatever he'd like.
Which for me was like, I've been doing like Italian food all my life.
Sure, yeah.
And
you'd never know by the accent,
No, right.
No.
And I remember like when I was in the city, we were doing like, we were going out. And I remember cooks. Like, it was populated from line cooks, all for cooks. Like, it was populated from line cooks. And, like, 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock, we were having, like, tartars and stuff. Like, so I almost went down and be like, okay. When we opened like that, I'm like, I remember I was like, we got to de-Italianize this menu. What can we do? But Elizabeth was like, I want to, like, a pizza.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want Italian pizza. We're going to do, I want a burger, but a banger burger. Like a steak, like, just let's say, she was always like, she was, because of course, like, we're a few years apart, and it was like, I like more of a bar scene, but I don't want to have a shitty bar menu. I want to have a nice bar menu. And she has an awesome taste in tequila, bourbon, mm-hmm. and like our bars, and she built a beautiful list and stuff. I'm like, okay, so we got to build something nice. We got to do wings, no fried wings. We're going to do it baked. We're going to do it nice. Like,
right.
Antibiotic free, clean.
Mm-hmm.
It's like strip down all the simple sauce, simple stuff. So, how many times we changed the menu at the beginning?
I could pull up our emails.
Oh, God. Like, and we were meeting. We live around the block from each other so we can escape from each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember walking in there all excited.
It's good and bad,
and giving her the menu. I was like, she was like, okay, this, okay, I come back.
Yeah.
And welcome back. But it was, again, she's always been, like, very supportive of anything, like, where, you've been doing this for a long time, and you see sometimes there's always that, almost that rust between, like, owners and the kitchen, where, like, oh, come on, what the hell are you doing, this and this. But she's always been, let's see what we're going to do, let's see what, so always, like, next, 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 until... Then we kind of like, we didn't see what we were doing until I saw the place. Then I saw the place. I was like, wait a minute, we got to refine this a little bit more. And then we did like friends and family for a week or so. And then, then let's say I was like, let's hit the road. And we have changed the menu slightly.
Yeah, well, that happens. I mean, you got to steer it around what's selling and what's not, you know, whatever.
We're still changing.
You'll be doing that in 3 years from now. Same thing.
You know? Oh, sometimes Elizabeth was like, what are we changing now? I'm like, oh, this is a little bit better. This is a little bit. So simplifying also operation where, like, you know, anything that I change or I do, Elizabeth, come in the kitchen. Let's go. Let's eat it.
Check it out.
I was here, like, oh, it's good. It can be better. Like, it's. This is one of the greatest, like, probably feeling that, you know, working together for over everything. I was like, oh, this is good. Okay. Like,
I got to tell you, looking at the pictures on the website, I'm starving.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm drooling. I have one question. There's the calamari.
Yes.
And it seems to be you're spraying something on it.
Calamari, those are actually they're domestic calamaris, and all we do is a mixture of flour and cornstarch. So we do, like, you know, we tried with semolina, they were coming a little too grainy, but just a little flour, no butter, lightly fried, and then we do a little Thai chili sauce, a little lemon, a little honey, a little spicy honey, and just black sesame seeds. But it's one of a few things that, and just black sesame seeds, but it's one of our number one seller, like, for appetizers.
Yeah.
And honestly, we were both at the beginning on the fence because everybody has calamari.
Yeah.
But I'm like, we need to have a solid calamari. Like, you know, it's got to be something, not Italian, no marinara sauce.
Mm-hmm.
But some people ask.
I get a kick out of
they
also.
They always ask.
You say that your wings are baked. That's so much in the style of Tom Shordell, because on his menu over at Jewel in the day, you had a duck wings or something. And
yeah, we did duck wings.
It wasn't the typical fried wings. It was
no, we used to confit them. You know, I'd cook them very slowly in duck fat for 4 hours, you know, and then we'd flash them. But the duck wings were popular. I started that out east because, you know, that was duck country out there, you know, and Crescent Farms. They're coming back now, thank God. But yeah, it was, we decided to do duck wings because I was on, you know, I have three restaurants out in wine country out there. And so we did that, and I used to use smoked duck instead of bacon in the carbonara also, just as a kind of a twist for the area, you know. So,
you definitely started a trend, because now I've seen it, like, you know, somebody doing like duck prosciutto.
Oh yeah,
They've been trying to, like, you know, do a little bit something different.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's funny about, I go back and forth, you know, like I said, I've been cooking for forever. And I finally learned, after going from, you know, a kid, you know, not knowing, to having my own places and trying to, I had all these 3- and 4-star restaurants, you know, where I was, man, I realized, you know, after my sick food, you know, and then I realized, you know, after my 6th trip to Tuscany that, you know, they got something going on over here. They're using really good ingredients, and they're not messing with them too much, you know. Nope. They're kind of letting the flavors just sing by themselves rather than masking everything and trying to come up with something different. Maybe I should just leave it alone. So I've been trying more and more as I get older to do some simpler things, you know, like in the summer, you know, we do a tomato salad. Now I'm just doing a little basil and some high-grade extra virgin olive oil rather than vinaigrettes and throwing everything out, cheeses and all the other stuff in there. I'm just leaving it alone now, you know, which is kind of fun.
So I got to ask you, so this Super Bowl, instead of me and the guys hanging out, we're doing a couple Super Bowl. And looking at the menu at Eddie's, I mean, again, you mentioned burgers, pizza, the wings, the calamari. Can I?
Special catering job here.
I'm trying to find out. Can I use you as my caterer?
Yeah,
so just place some orders. Is it do you have catering size dishes, or I would order multiple appetizers and stuff like that?
Smaller, we're doing appetizers only this week. Just smaller, we're doing half a trays of calamari, rice balls. We have, like, you know, some mushroom truffle rice balls, chicken wings, spinach dip, like, simple stuff that, you know, because this is what Super Bowl is about. Like, you know, we're going to get drunk, watch the game, I mean, at some point we'll watch the game too, because by 6:30 probably, like, you know.
Yeah, everybody's half lit.
And I think I want to be the designated pickup guy, because Elizabeth's got a taste for tequila, I heard.
Yep.
So I want to check out the bar.
Great taste for tequila. I don't drink wine. I only drink tequila, really.
That's pretty funny, because we got Tom over here who only drinks wine. And now we got this side that's into tequila and bourbon. I love it. Love it.
Well, it's the first time I heard my voice on the radio, I'm thinking, you know, because you don't really hear yourself when you're talking, no? But when I hear the radio thing, I sound like a thug from Queens, you know what I mean? It's like, what happened? I don't know. I thought it was so articulate, you know? Meanwhile. Anyway, let's talk about wine, because I just got back from Napa, and, you know, had a lot of fun out there. So talk to me about your wine list a little bit. How did you develop that?
That was all my mom and Mo. Uh-huh. I honestly really don't know much about wine.
She has an incredibly refined taste for tequila.
Yeah.
Well, it's only one color. Well, two colors, you know. Wine is three. That's all.
But we found, we have a family friend of ours who runs a liquor store, and he got us a contact for a distributor, and she was just wonderful.
Who's that? Who's the distributor?
I know her name, but
yeah.
Well, I'm just curious. I'm not putting her on the spot. I just
She works for a very small importer. They work like with small European and American farm. Like, so Michelle is Elizabeth's mom. Like, we were working a little bit. It's almost going away. Me and you, we had this conversation. So we're going away from name wine.
Yeah.
Where, like, we wanted to find small, like, producers, like, because nowadays there's a ton of them. You just got to have the patience to go through it. And some of them, they were winners. Some of them, like, so-so. But the most important thing is with Elizabeth looking at the POS. What moves, what doesn't. Even if something moves, I'm like, okay, maybe if we get, like, you know, a better flavor profile. It's not even about the price, because, as you know, you're a wine enthusiast as I am. The difference, it can be $1 or $2 a bottle at the end of the day, but to get a better product.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the selection was almost like, first and foremost, like, you know, what we like. Something a little bit lighter, something a little bit more expensive. But from when we did the menu, from the food menu to even the wine, we wanted to make sure that we keep our cost very low. Because where we are in Oyster Bay, there's a lot of fine dining, which are great places. Nothing to say. I go myself. Elizabeth goes as well. We go to each other's places.
Yeah.
But we wanted to have a place where people can go home. Like, so that's why we don't go above $50 on our menu.
Right.
From the entrees and as well through the wine, keeping, we don't have like a $400 wine. We try to keep, like, you know, affordable wines and still maximize whatever we can with the quality. Having some American, some, for example, Pinot Noir. I like a good Oregon. Washington State, and then like New Zealand, Sauvignon Blanc, of course. Almost touching on the classics. We have a Primitivo. We're actually working on that. We have a Primitivo from Puglia. Maybe we get a Zinfandel now from California. We're actually working on that. A few cabs.
So the one of the Venica that I was drinking when I went there. It's you know, what's funny about Italy is that there's, you know, you go to Bordeaux, there's like, you know, five grapes. You go to Burgundy, there's two or three. You know, you go to Italy, there's 2,500. It'll put you in therapy, you know, trying to figure out what it. But that was one I hadn't seen before. I liked that a lot. That was really good.
Thank you, Chef.
Yeah.
And then also we have a bottle of Camus, the Camus line, that which Dad was had, is her dad's favorite.
His favorite, yeah.
So it's a must-have.
Yeah, of course.
He was a big wine drinker.
Was he? Yeah. Yeah, I know Frederick. Yeah.
Frederick Wildman is the distributor.
I know Frederick. Yeah. You got Heidi?
Heidi, yes. She is wonderful.
Yeah, she's Heidi's great.
This morning.
Heidi just hooked me up with a vineyard that I love in California, you know, when I was there.
Yeah,
you know?
She's...
Yeah, she's... And she's right so much fun to deal with.
Yeah, she is.
I met her half the time. I got to meet her.
Yeah.
You know what's great about drinking wine? If Stu and I went out and we drank two bottles of tequila, we'd be two idiots, right? If we went out and drank two bottles of Cabernet, we're two aristocrats. Yeah. It's like,
well, I love said. That.
Yeah.
Well,
see, said. Same buzz, different perception. You know what I mean? That's why I like to drink Cab. You know?
No, but I agree with you where, like, we were talking about this before up here, like, where wine, like, now it's also like the way we try to approach wine is, where I like to have a bottle of wine. Growing up in Sicily, having those very tannic wine, where wine was associated with food, as we were talking before. Where
sure,
now,
yeah.
We're also trying to have like something that you may have with dinner, but then otherwise we want to have wine that people just hang. just sure. have like, you know, some calamari, have like wings, and then you want to have wine or you want to have a Manhattan, like, you know, so trying to have a light profile wine and then something a little bit more busier when you have food.
You want to be able to have one, more than one glass, you know, that's the real indication that you have the right, you know, wine, especially by the glass program, because anybody can sell one glass of wine. You have one, I don't know, give me something else, you know. But if they have two, you know, they go back for a second one, and you know, or a seventh, you know, then you know that they're enjoying it. And I'm like you. I like to chase down. This is why I was in Napa this week. I like to chase down artists and winemakers. I'm not a big, you know, label guy. You know, I've been tasting probably 500 wines a year for the last 40 years, so I know what's out there. You know, and when I go to my friend's steakhouses, I don't eat steak, but every once in a while I'll go up to Rothman's or something because. You know, I have a baked potato and a thing of cream spinach, and you know, he's got a machine there with a bunch of wine on it, which is great. And but you know, you look at the wine list from some of these steakhouses, I can tell you what's on the list. It's all the same, the usual suspects. You know, Spring Mountain, Amos. There's all of the wine. You know, I'm different, man. I'm always chasing that guy that's in the vineyard. Yeah. You know, checking the Brix levels and you know, working it in the. You know, those are the guys I want to drink. If you ever get a chance, I was just at this place the other day called David Arthur. Maybe some of the best Cabernet I ever drunk in my life. And I'm not a big California fan, I'll admit it, you know. But, man, I got to tell you, it was, oh, my God, good, you know. And they're making that wine out there. They're not cheap. I mean, obviously, the you know, and Kenzo is another one if you ever get a chance. But the Kenzo wines, they, you know, they start at, you know, wholesale, $160 a bottle, $170. They're hard. You know, it's a tough sell. You know, you're going to have to get $300, $350 for a bottle. If
yeah.
You know, I don't do that personally. What I do is, you know, like my lower end wines, I price them higher. My higher end wines, I price lower. So if I buy a wine for $100 for even, you know, I'll sell it for $150. You know, $145. I'd rather move it. Is it what's the point of having it sitting in a cellar for 3 years? You know, so you know, make you $50 and you go. You know,
that's actually a great suggestion.
Meanwhile, if I buy a thing for $5, I may sell it for $20, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, whatever.
Spread the margins a little bit.
Yeah. You know, years ago, I came across, a friend of mine is a distributor, so I was in a city, and he had a table at one of these tastings, right? And he says, check this out. It's a Mourvedre from Spain. Now, Mourvedre is mostly grown in the Rhone Valley in France, right? So I said, I never had a Spanish Mourvedre. So he says, taste it, see what you think. So it was pretty good, right? So he goes, how much do you think it is? I said, I'm pretty good at this. I said, it's probably about $12-$13 a bottle. He goes, $3.98. I said, so explain to me how they get the wine in the bottle with a cork and a label on a ship over here on a truck to my place for $3. You know what I mean? It's crazy, you know? But the wine was good. I don't know how they did it, but it was actually good. And yeah, I bought like 50 cases. I was selling it by the glass, though. And people were loving it, you know? So, and my point with all this is I don't think there's really any bad juice anymore.
No.
You know, you have good and you have better, stuff you like, stuff you may not like as much. But there's, you know, like 25 years ago, you would taste the wine and go, oh, my God, don't give up the day job, dude. I mean, get yourself a career. Yeah. This is terrible. But not anymore. I mean, my mother was a box wine girl, right? She used to drink the box. It was drinkable, you know. It's not terrible, you know. So anyway, that's my speech on that, you know.
No, but on this, like, I fully agree with you where, like, if you buy a bottle of Sassicaia, Opus, like,
yeah,
and I have a friend that he always had it like Camus and this. I'm like, I know the wine is good, but I want to find that $35, a $30 bottle of wine where like I'm like, now you got my attention. Like because a lot of people, it's almost like, you know, you go to a steakhouse, it's a steak. I'm like, we can get the same steak. Like, you know, it just
sometimes of course.
Almost like I know what it is, but and this is the same reason why I go out. I want to eat something, and I want to drink something that. It surprised me.
You want to be inspired, you know? Yeah, of
like,
course.
I want to be almost like, what is this? You need to get my imagination going. Like, what am I drinking? What am I eating? You know, digging it out, giving it to my wife or whoever is with me. Like, what do you think is this scent that I can catch in there? What does he put in there? And that's what, but now also with the wines, there is the natural wine also that they're coming up.
Yeah.
Like slowly, but. There is a great change also into making natural wine.
Where
you don't get the headache finally anymore, you know.
Well, if you drink enough, you never really sober up, so you don't get the headache at all, you know. So that's how you avoid it, you know.
Even it out.
Yeah, right. Let's go. You know?
So I'm the eternal optimist. We're talking about wine and all the food and the selections at Eddie's Bistro, restaurant and bistro. So 11 degrees this morning, but I'm thinking of the summer. Is there outdoor dining at Eddie's?
Yeah, we have a huge, not like a huge one, but it's about 40 to 50 more seats outside. We just converted it into this beautiful garden with seating, with barrel tables, with regular dining chairs, tables. Then we have low tables, umbrellas, string lights. So we're very excited to open that up. We opened it up for a couple weeks when we opened up in September, and we got a glimpse of what the summer could be like.
Yeah, and being an ambassador for Oyster Bay, what's the parking scenario up north?
Right behind us, there is a municipal parking lot. Then it's mainly street parking.
But understand, Oyster Bay in the summer, spring, fall.
Yeah.
To walk around the village.
No, because the beach.
Incredible.
The beach in the park is not too far. It's, I don't know, probably a 5-minute walk from
Not even. Yeah.
And what's better than on a nice evening having a nice meal? I know you have small plates as well as regular portions, but you know, you wander around the town. There's some nice shops.
Yeah. Oyster Bay was never like this when I was a kid.
No, they really, the restaurant scene has exploded there, you know? And it's kind of, you know, for me, I've been a student of the game for a long time. I tend to avoid like little parochial, you know, places that you have to go to, you know. I prefer the highway thing, you know, for business. But, you know, I've been living in that area now for about 5 or 6 years. And, you know, I'm surprised at all the traffic that gets up there. You get a lot of people up there. You know, that car show thing every, Tuesday or something in summer.
And then, of course,
there's
the annual Oyster Fest.
Oyster Fest.
I have to ask you, after, you know, being at Oyster Fest and all the seafood availability, do you get involved with raw bar and oysters and clams and that type of stuff, or is it?
Yeah, we haven't really yet. We've definitely talked about it. I think more of a spring, summer, we'll get more into that because it is a huge. Everybody in Oyster Bay loves clams, oysters.
Yeah. No, it's everything's different today. I go to my local sushi restaurant and Kashi is in Merrick or Belmore, and they have Oyster Fest. You know, in the middle of the winter.
Listen, you got Italian restaurants that have sushi bars. I mean, you know, it's all gone.
Well, that's very interesting because whenever you go to any of the Italian markets, Ivorone or Sapino, Salpino, there's a sushi bar.
It's crazy. I mean, you know, crudo I get. Your sushi, not so much, you know. Tomatoes and soy sauce.
It almost became like the chicken parm, like that you find there in every, even in an Irish bar.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a couple, you know, I've been to a few lately. There's a guy that opened up in Roslyn called Okuro. Have you been there?
No, yet.
Should
honestly,
go there.
My go-to for takeout in Syosset is Arada.
That is good. This is different, though. It's he was at Bond Street in the city for a long time, which is a fabulous place. Should check it out. He's brilliant. The guy's really...
Last Thursday? Uh-huh. I think me and my wife were going to go last Thursday. Uh-huh. And then we take a detour. She was like, come on, margaritas. And then we went to a place, whatever. Like, I wasn't too impressed. Let's put it this way. Near our house.
So. Yeah.
So on your menu, again, you have the staple items. You have your regular full menu. And there's weekly specials. Is it daily specials, weekly specials?
Weekly specials, yeah. So Mo changes the specials every week.
We try to, being a local place, and this I did it also back in the days, we always like Saturday and Sunday, usually try to take like Sunday night off, but Sunday always pop in a few hours, and we make the special. Elizabeth, come here. I was like, what are we making? And we always trying to do something, again, through our line, through establish our cultures of being simple, but we make sure being a local place, we try to have at least one thing different every week. Where like my last restaurant that was similar to this, where we had people that were coming on Tuesdays and Wednesday, and they got the table at the corner, the same server stuff, and they were most likely ordered the same thing, but every here and there they were choosing something different. They wanted to hear the specials, so we try to keep it interesting again, but very simple. We always try to feature like one seafood, one appetizer. We're gonna try to incorporate, as you were saying before, more seafood. The only reason why we don't go too heavy right now is because being the winter time, a little bit slow, we like seafood very fresh. So.
Understood. And sure. Again, is lunch served at the restaurant on the weekends or during the week at all? Or
no, yet, but. But thanks Sunday, to Elizabeth.
Yeah, the weekends we have lunch. We actually just.
You have Sunday brunch?
Yes. We just started Saturday and Sunday brunch.
Oh, Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, with bottomless mimosas, Bellinis, Bloody Marys, and then a whole list
The
of
French toast after. Looks incredible.
Yeah.
You're going to make Oyster Bay very happy with bottomless.
We started that last weekend, so with the snow, we didn't really get. Good crowd. But
yeah, it's hard to gauge it on a day like that. You know?
But yeah, we think that's going to be a good
We did try a lot of them because it was the first day. So I was like, let's try everything. Let's go
and my photographer was there. So we had every plate out.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, definitely wasn't a good, unfortunately, it wasn't like the busiest that we want. But we know that it's going to be, Elizabeth, she's been telling me Mom, whenever doing brunch since day one.
And what are the social media handles you have? I was browsing through. I saw Instagram, Facebook.
Instagram and Facebook.
And you have a very nice website. And who maintains all of that? Because it really, again, the photos are incredible. Again, I'm starving.
My sister maintains all the.
Well done, media. I have to say.
She works it. She works in the fashion industry, kind of on the e-commerce side. So she knows all about putting a website together.
It's amazing how that's really taken over. I mean, years ago, there was the Times and there was Newsday, and you would open a place and they would rush to review you, And the rule of thumb was if you got one star, you were busy for a year, two, you were busy for two, three, and four. Same thing, right? Yeah. So everybody was gunning for the two and up. As soon as you opened, people would flock to you, and some people would go on to other things, like lemmings are following around, But now I remember I got, I opened up a place called Beju up here, which was a sushi bar. And we were the only 4-star Japanese restaurant in the history of Long Island. And I was busy for an hour and a half. what happened? We're big chefs here. Where'd it go, But, I'm a dinosaur. It's the whole thing of social media now, Instagram and all of that stuff.
So I get a kick. You go out to dinner on a Saturday night, and Carrie and I, we very much enjoy, let's call it family style, but sharing.
Uh-huh.
So we'll get a couple of things, and couples will say, why don't we get a couple of appetizers we share or whatever. Everything's served. I go to take some. No. We'll have to take a picture first. Everybody's
I know.
Documenting what they're eating.
The phone eats first.
Oh, yeah. Valerie does that with me once in a while. And it doesn't bother me so much, but it's I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm kind of I'm an old guy, It's kind of against my principles or whatever. But the thing, the whole small place thing, we all eat like that now, I can't remember the last time I had an entree with potato and a vegetable, It's always, I come to your place, we're always bouncing around. First time I went there, I said, tell the chef to send me out two or three things. I don't care what they are. I'll eat anything, So it was fun. It was fun to be surprised.
Thank you, chef.
Yeah, no, I trust you,
No, but me and Elizabeth, when this were in this, we're both simple eaters and stuff where... as you said, people is like, oh, it's time, the phone eats first. And but also what I love is that this is a really a family, where Michelle, Christiana, which yesterday, for example, was her birthday. I made something. It's like, oh, hold on, no, we got to get the phone and stuff. Yeah. She's the creative.
She runs Instagram and the social, so I guess she has to really take the photos.
But. Well, yeah, of course. And it's important now. It's
a priority.
Critical. Yeah.
In order to, everyone's because staring. Nowadays people, then back in the days, probably you were going to a place because, yes, it was charming. The owner, you like the food. And now it's people, it's almost like all those food critics now. These influencers / food
Yelp,
critics.
Yelp, yeah.
So and they go to Jimmy's place. Everybody goes, Jimmy's number one rated. Everybody's going to go there. I'm like, do you even like his product? Or you just go there because everybody says everybody, that it's good?
Because you see it on social media. Yeah. Everyone's staring at social media.
Yeah. We have a unique perspective being chefs. I can look at the reason I went to Eddie's the first time, because I can look at a menu and tell you what level the kitchen is. There are certain tells, ingredients that you use, techniques that you use that I can see on the menu. I'm like, okay, this cat knows what he's doing. I'm going to go there and check it out, Other people don't have that insight, so they're looking at pictures and whatever. But the Yelp thing, and you know, some of those restaurants, the Long Island Restaurant Complainers Society, whatever the hell it is, oh my God! I mean, I read some of the things on it, and my fingers and my glasses off. I'm like, no, what are you doing?
So we've dissected the Eddie's menu and wine list, and I mean, the wonderful appetizers, a great wine list, the entrees. We haven't gotten into desserts.
Stu has a sweet tooth.
What's the story with dessert?
Dessert. We only have a. Oops. We don't have a huge. We don't have a huge selection of desserts, but our desserts, most of them are all homemade, right in the kitchen. We have an apple pie.
Be careful with that homemade thing because it depends on whose home it is. I've had homemade stuff that I was like, oh, what am I going to do with this? You know.
So I was out with a bunch
housemaid,
of people.
I like housemaid.
Housemaid.
There you go.
I was out with a bunch of people recently, and they were talking about apple pie and about overdosing on apple pie. Is that like a sugar?
Is it a mainline thing? I mean,
I don't know. But again, I find it not a bad thing not to have a well-developed dessert menu because I hardly ever eat dessert, to be honest. I just dwell on, you know, appetizer, salad, entree, and
I'm not like this is I take the blame on this because I'm not a big baker. Let's put it this way,
right.
Like, you know, it's funny that she makes fun of me. I've been trying to develop a brownie, like, you know, that for for consistency stuff for a month and a half. I tried it at home, it's good. I tried the rice, but we try to do very classic. We have a great bread pudding. For example, for the holiday, we made it into a panettone bread pudding with the canditi, like, you know, raisins and stuff. That was great. For example, instead of ice cream, we use gelato. We use chocolate gelato, vanilla, bread pudding. We have an apple crumb and little mini donuts with Nutella. We try to keep it very, very easy, but I know that I had to improve it a little bit.
And you just said bakery. So do you serve bread with your entrees, or is that not... Again, not all restaurants serve bread.
Yeah, we do not serve, like, if somebody asks, like, we don't do the classic, like, you know, bread basket because we try to be also really generous with our portions. But we do use a local bakery. It's Provision, which they do. They're amazing because, you know, as chefs, we forget cutoff line. So I need bread, like, yesterday. I'm like, and I call, like, you know, one of the directors in there. His name is Andrew. Andrew, I forgot to order the brioche bun. I'm like, and I was like, damn it, when do you need? I was like, in an hour. Like, and no, but it's not. But we order daily from, probably almost daily for our fresh pasta. It's made from them. They use only semolina and water.
Mm-hmm.
And then our brioche bun, they're made from them. Our sourdough, ran out of pasta the other night. Walk the delivery here. Like,
oh, nice. Yeah.
And
yeah,
this, we ran out of pasta the other night. They brought like 3 pounds of pasta.
Oh,
like,
there you go. Yeah.
7 o'clock at night. You can beat that.
No.
So I have to throw this out at you restaurateurs surrounding me here. Again, I'm the person coming and eating at the restaurants. But when you have a bread basket or serving, you know, bread products, how do you serve your butter? Because this, to me, getting butter in pads wrapped up in silver foil is crazy. I don't get it. And it's frozen.
And it's hard.
And you
know.
Can't.
Yeah.
So when I get a small bowl or plate of whipped butter, or be it salted or unsalted or whatever, it's just so much better. I mean, I know sometimes you get a real, you know, warm rolls or something, and I'm holding my butter over trying to, you know, melt
warm
it
up. Yeah, you got to fold it in there and hope it melts.
I'm kneading it in my hand. So what's, I'm just curious from the room, what your opinions are of
that? Well, my opinion is, I remember to this day when we tried the menu, Elizabeth was like, you know that I had in a place not far from us, it was like, there was this beautiful steak sandwich and the bread was freaking cold.
Yeah.
So that's one of our. So I'm like, all right, number one thing, never send the bread cold. So bread is gonna be warm, and butter you can keep to room temperature.
Yeah, it's gotta be soft.
So that's so funny you just said that. So I happen to be at Ubes, and I'm a cool guy. When I'm at a sports event or a concert, a hot dog is a nice way to go. So they had foot long hot dogs, but they served it in a almost a hero roll.
No, that's no good.
But neither was the Frank. But it was
consistency is incredible. Important.
Not that it was. It was hard. And I, for some reason, my fantasy is a hamburger or a hot dog in a soft brioche type of
bread. Soft roll. Yeah, of course. Yeah, warm too. It's, you know, grilled. Caramelizes some of the sugars in there and gives it a different flavor. Well, listen, we got to think about getting out of here. Why don't you tell us how we get in touch with you? Phone numbers, addresses, websites, all of that.
So you could either, you could find us on our social media. You could DM us, message us, or call us. Phone number is 516-460-8300. We're located at 80 South Street in Oyster Bay. So come on by.
Yeah, that's just, if you're going to Oyster Bay, you just go north, and right before you get to the water, slam on the brakes, and it's right there.
So when you Google it, it's Eddie's Bistro and Bar?
Eddie'sBistroBar.com, yeah.
Oyster Bay.
Yep.
And again, you're on Facebook, Instagram.
Yes, Facebook and
Instagram. And you have a very nice website.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a jewel box of a place, man. It's become one of my favorite haunts now up in Oyster Bay. Just love the place and appreciate you guys opening and
listen,
Tom, gracing us with another.
We do understand that any place that accepts you with your Crocs, it's like,
always accept you.
I was going to mention that. I can go in there in my Crocs and I'll be fine. Fur or no fur, I'm gonna continue to wear. I don't care what they say down in San Francisco. What do they know about fashion? Anyway, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. And keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. We'll see you next week. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
All right.